This morning's subject is Reminiscences of Swami Sivananda, which is a lecture by Swami Ashokananda, which was published in one of a series of pamphlets. As most of you know, Swami Sivananda was one of the principal disciples of Sri Ramakrishna and himself a very extraordinary person. He became the president of the Ramakrishna Math and Ramakrishna Mission in 1922 when Swami Brahmananda passed away. The first president was Swami Vivekananda, the second was Swami Brahmananda, and the third was Swami Sivananda. By that time, Swami Sivananda was, of course, not a young person anymore. I would not say that he was very old. He was probably in his late 60s, but old age had, as it were, set in. On several occasions, I had seen him when he was much younger, and my memory of him is that he was then indeed a very nice-looking person. I have sometimes thought that he was the most beautiful in appearance of all the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. He was tall, with an erect and noble bearing, and was very spirited looking. His features and body were exceedingly well formed, and he had a wonderful golden complexion. Often the minds of such great souls are in a very high state, and their blood at that time has a tendency of coursing upward. I have told you on other occasions how Swami Premananda, another disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, would often be in a state of ecstasy and how his face would become red gold in color. Swami Sivananda's face seldom became like that, but there was a slightly reddish haze, a sort of reddish mantle, and that, of course, made him look even more spirited. In those early days, he was in many respects kindness personified, but he was also very fiery. It used to be said in the monastery, in the Belur Math, that if Swami Sivananda were coming from the east, all the younger monks would go toward the north in order not to meet him face to face. If you were not just right, if something about you or your appearance was slightly out of order, they would not want to meet him face to face. Because if his eyes should happen to fall upon you, then you could be ready for some fireworks. In order to escape those fireworks, the monks would generally try to avoid him. But that was only in his younger years. Even before he became president of the order, he became much more gentle. In 1921, when Swami Ashokananda was living in the monastery at Madras, Swami Sivananda came there with Swami Brahmananda and some other monks. I noticed at that time that he had aged. His body had become a little soft, his carriage was not so erect, and there was not so much fire in his eyes. He had become very kindly. Of course, we had heard that he had made some disciples. That's the cure. If a Swami makes a few disciples, then he can no longer look at you with such eagle eyes. He becomes warm and gentle. Shortly after Swami Brahmananda and Swami Sivananda returned to Belur Math from Madras, Swami Brahmananda passed away and Swami Sivananda became president of the order. In a few years after that, I had occasion to seek his help and came to know of his great kindness at first hand. Now, most of the things I can tell you about him that are not already in the books are in connection with some personal matters. After due thought, I have decided that I shall tell you some of those things. From one point of view, it would be better not to, but from another point of view, I have thought I might as well, for I cannot otherwise give you any true idea of my relationship with Swami Sivananda and of my indebtedness to him. So I shall have to make a fairly long introduction. I hope you will not mind. This is continuing Swami Ashokananda's reminiscences. You see, when I was in high school, that of course, I think he was born in 1893, so that would have been like 1910 or so. You see, when I was in high school, I came to know of Swami Vivekananda and felt extraordinarily drawn to him. The first book of his that I read was A Study of Religion. This is a collection of some of his lectures. I was fired by it. It was as if a whole new world had opened up. I also learned of Sri Ramakrishna at that same time and was taken by one of the teachers of the high school that I attended to visit the Belur Mutt. On my return from the Belur Mutt, I became very much more devoted than ever to Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda. I set up a shrine to them both in the house where I was staying while I was attending school, and there I performed morning worship. I would get up before dawn and would go to a neighboring garden. There in the darkness, the early morning dawn, I would pluck fragrant flowers for offering. Soon I would bathe and then sit in worship and meditation. That would last through many hours. And then I would take some breakfast and go to school. It would then be about 11 o'clock. You see, schools didn't start so early in Bengal in those days as they do in this country. Other free times of the day or evening I would spend on studying the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna in the original Bengali and the books of Swami Vivekananda. Thus there came a gradual deepening of spirit. One day, a very strange thing happened. During the afternoon, I was meditating on the Divine Mother Kali, as was my custom, when suddenly I felt that the presence of the Mother was replaced by the vivid presence of Swami Vivekananda. The change was quite sudden and very distinct, and immediately I began to feel that Swami Vivekananda was pouring his power and spirit into me. It was a definite and unmistakable experience, just as you would put the mouth of a full jar against the mouth of an empty one, one above the other, and just as the contents of the first would pour into the second without reservation or obstruction, so his power poured into me. And as I was about to lose consciousness, I pulled myself from that state, but the thing had been done, accomplished fully. You must admit that it was a very strange experience, very strange and very sudden and unexpected. I had not even been meditating on Swami Vivekananda. A little while later, I looked at myself in the mirror and I found that the whites of my eyes had turned deep red. I did not know what to make of any of it. Well, sometime after that, I had a dream. I dreamt that Swami Vivekananda came to my family's house. In that dream, I thought, well, he is my guru. He has become my guru. My guru has come. I must tell my mother. So some members of my family and a friend of mine came in to greet him and stood around him in a semicircle. He sat on a chair and I sat at his feet. He was very affectionate to me. He would not talk with anyone else or look at anyone else. He just talked and talked with me. I had to ask him, sir, please talk with the others. He was so gracious, he just poured his affection over me. And at that time, I knew in this dream that he was my teacher. That dream was very vivid, and it made me think a little. How much truth was there in this dream? Did the experience I had had during my meditation mean that I had received spiritual instruction, spiritual initiation from Swamiji? Could I be sure of that? I sometimes used to go to Belur Math in those days and had come to know Swami Premananda very closely, another disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. But even so, I was very shy with him. I told him about my experience, but I did not really tell it fully in all its details, nor did I make clear that I was trying to ask him if it had been a real, genuine experience or not. So naturally, I did not get a clear answer from him. I then thought that the best thing to do would be to write a letter. When one is shy, you see, the best way to express oneself and to ask straight questions is to write a letter. So I wrote to him the whole story and asked him, do you think it was really an initiation? Is it to be accepted as true? He replied promptly with a long letter in which he wrote, you have been born to do Swamiji's work, to do Swami Vivekananda's work. You are blessed indeed that you have in this way been initiated by him. Around that time, I had started going to college in Calcutta, continues Swami Ashokananda in this telling. Swami Premananda had promised me that after I finished my university education, I would be allowed to enter the order, the monastery. But not before that. He once wrote to me, there will come to the monastery many people from foreign countries. If you are not well educated, how will you talk with them? The ideas of Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda are so profound that if you are not very learned, you will not be able to understand them properly. So finish your education. Once when I had gone to visit him in the late afternoon at Belur Math, he told me that Swami Vivekananda had been very fond of certain subjects. One was philosophy, another was history, and a third was Sanskrit. He felt that I should study those subjects. He was most eager for me to have a good education. I did not follow those instructions of his in every aspect, but in due course I did graduate from the Calcutta University. That was in 1917. But at that time, my health was not all good. I felt I should not enter the monastery just then. Swami Premananda had gone to East Bengal, and so I wrote to him asking him what I should do. And he replied, I am now traveling around and won't be coming to Belur Math for some time. So I advise you to go there and talk to Swami Turiyananda. He is a wonderful monk and a very great spiritual man. And he is also very learned, so go and talk with him and take his advice. Well, I was not very willing to do that. I wanted to talk only with Swami Premananda about entering the monastery. Yet, since he had said that I should talk with Swami Turiyananda, I felt that I should at least go to Belur Mutt and see him. Not talk with him, but at least to see him. So I went to Belur Mutt one afternoon from Calcutta. I went and I found Swami Turiyananda, Swami Shivananda, and Swami Brahmananda in one room. They were having a very good conversation together, talking and laughing. They were very happy. I noticed that there was a halo of golden light around the head of Swami Turiyananda. I thought there might be something wrong with my eyes, but I found that everything else looked quite normal. My eyes were all right. Still, every time I looked at Swami Turiyananda, there was that light around his head. The other two Swamis didn't have it, only he had it. However, I did not ask him for advice. I went home thinking I would come later on and talk with Swami Premananda, whom I had originally wanted to see. But while Swami Premananda was in East Bengal, he became ill with a malignant fever, and a little later, before he fully recovered, he had an attack of flu. That was in 1918, at the time of the worldwide flu epidemic. He was brought to Calcutta for treatment, but within a few days, actually, he passed away. Thus it was that I had no further opportunity of talking with him, and the problem of whether or not I should enter the monastery remained unresolved. So finally I wrote to Swami Turiyananda, explained everything to him, and asked him several pertinent questions. He wrote a long letter in which he answered all my questions in detail and explained many things that had not been clear to me. He told me that my initiation from Swamiji in the dream had been real and explained that there are three kinds of initiation. One kind comes directly from Shiva and is called Shambhava. Another type of initiation is called Shakti and is made up of knowledge which enters into the disciple's body. The third is the usual kind in which the guru gives a mantra and other instructions. He said that I had received the second kind of initiation in which no mantra or instruction is given. You don't have to do anything, he wrote. What you have received is enough. It will go on working. Swami Vivekananda himself will make you do whatever is necessary. I was much pleased, and for the time being I thought, that is very nice indeed. I don't have to bother about it anymore. I have got what everyone seeks. But such is the mind, you know. The mind does not give up its doubts so easily. A little later, I sent word through a friend of mine to Swami Brahmananda that I would like to join the order, to join the monastery. That was a very strange thing to do, just unheard of. I should have gone and presented myself to him and made my request in person. But such was Swami Brahmananda's graciousness that he did not take offense. He asked my friend many questions about me, and then he said, yes, tell him to come at once. I can then send him to another monastery where the climate is better. But I did not go to Belur. There was a family indebtedness, and I felt I couldn't really renounce the world until I had discharged that obligation. So I took a job, and in 7 months I was able to pay off that family debt. Having done so, I immediately went to Bhuvaneshwar in Orissa, where Swami Brahmananda was then staying, and asked his permission to join the monastery. I did not remind him of my earlier request. I thought the less said about that, the better. That was in May of 1920. I told him at that time about my experience of receiving something from Swami Vivekananda in dream. And I said that perhaps I should be initiated by him, that is, by Swami Brahmananda, as that experience of Swami Vivekananda, receiving something from Swami Vivekananda, may have been only hallucination. To this, Swami Brahmananda said, "Swami Vivekananda initiated you and you think it was a hallucination. If I initiate you, how can you be sure that you will not afterward think that also was a hallucination?" Well, in a few days, he sent me to the monastery in Madras and accepted me as a brahmacharian, as a probationer. As I told you, in 1921, Swami Brahmananda came to Madras. At that time, I asked him again for initiation. He said, "But you have told me that you had something from Swami Vivekananda." I felt that for some reason he was just not very eager. Afterward, I came to know that the monk who was in charge of the Madras monastery, Swami Sarvananda, had said to him on my behalf, "Maharaj, please give him initiation." Swami Brahmananda replied, "I am willing, I am always ready, but he has got something from Swami Vivekananda, so how can I do it?" While he was in Madras, he gave the vows of sannyasa to a few novices and asked me if I was going to take sannyasa, final renunciation, on that day. I was astonished because I had been a novice for only a year and a half, and usually the probationary period is much longer. I said, "Oh no, sir, I shall take vows of brahmacharya, of celibacy." I thought that he had made a mistake. Later I learned that from his personal attendant that he had wanted to give me sannyasa and that I should have said yes. Well, I did not feel too bad. We had no idea that he would die so soon. Before he left Madras, he had twice told me that he would stay for a while in Belur Math near Calcutta and then go on to Bhuvaneshwar, at which time he would send for me to come and live with him. But as it happened, he died in Calcutta in April of the following year, 1922. I felt really very desperate at that time, even though I had been given so many assurances that I had indeed been initiated by Swamiji. There was still doubt in my mind. So I thought my last hope was Swami Sivananda, whose birthday we're celebrating today. He was then the president of the order, and we considered that the Swami, who is president, almost stands in the place of Sri Ramakrishna. So I wrote to him. For a long time, no answer came, and I was nearly in despair. I took his silence to mean that he did not think that my experience had been real. Then came his letter. It was the first day of Durga Puja. I remember being in the chapel that morning and suddenly feeling that his answer had come at last. And then when I went downstairs to the monastery office, I found his letter waiting for me. And the letter is as follows. "Dear," then Swami Ashokananda's name, "Dear Ashokananda, I was not present for two," that is Swami Brahmananda's writing, "I was not present for 2 weeks at the mutt, hence my delay in replying to your letter. I have read your letter very carefully and it occurs to me that you do not have any need of taking any other initiation. A person like Swamiji, who is divine in nature and who is like an incarnation of God, since he has confirmed all these things in dream, then I look upon all this as absolutely true. You were asked to take initiation in Madras, and you tried for that, but as it happened, that did not take place. Then you must understand that you do not have any need to take initiation from anybody. Therefore, carry on as you have done before without anxiety. Know it for certain that at Sri Ramakrishna's will, Swami Vivekananda has been leading you in the right path and will continue to do so. Please know my earnest affection and blessing. Then signed Swami Shivananda. Swami Ashokananda's answer is, this letter acted like a charm on me. All the worries and anxieties that I had felt were just wiped off my mind. I knew that what he had written was true and final, and I need not have any more doubt. Much later, Swami Shivananda reinforced that blessing. On the evening before I sailed for America, he sent for me to come to his room at Belur Math. That was in May of 1931. He had become feeble by that time and often had to remain in bed. When I went to his room, he looked at me and said, "You are Swami Vivekananda's disciple, isn't it?" I said, "Yes, sir." That was all he said. Those were his last words to me, and I cannot forget them ever. By the time I returned for a visit to India at the end of 1934, he had passed away, so I never saw him again. But his parting words, reminding me whose disciple I was, have remained with me always. As I have told you at some length, others among the great Swamis have confirmed my experience, but it was Swami Shivananda who was able to remove every doubt from my mind. It was he who put the final stamp of certainty upon it. Well, that was one great blessing I received from him, for which I shall be forever grateful. There were many others, and I shall tell you a little about them. I took sannyas, this is again Swami Shivananda speaking. Swami Ashokananda speaking. I took sannyasa from Swami Shivananda in 1923, but my intimate acquaintance with him started after I had left Madras. When Swami Brahmananda had sent me to Madras, he said, "Stay there for 5 years and that will finish your training." I stayed there exactly 5 years. I had gone in May of 1920, and as it happened, I left in May of 1925. And just as Swami Brahmananda had said, my training was finished. After leaving there, I was sent to our Himalayan center, the Advaita Ashram at Mayavati, and very soon I became editor of Prabuddha Bharata, the monthly magazine of the Ramakrishna Order. That was a big task, but somehow I had gained sufficient knowledge and experience in Madras to undertake it. I had, as it were, become ready for it. So Swami Ashokananda then goes on. The point is, when he came, just before he was sent to San Francisco, Swami Shivananda proposed his name in a meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Ramakrishna Mission, and it was approved that he should go to San Francisco. So, but then, when he came to San Francisco, he found certain questions, certain things, certain problems were raised for him that he felt he couldn't give a good answer to. So he would write to Swami Sivananda at Biromat in Calcutta in order to get advice on these questions. And he always received appropriate answers and appropriate instructions. One question, here he goes on, one question arose in my mind. This is a summary. You see, there is a body of trustees that administers the affairs of this order. I thought, if ever these trustees ask me to go to a foreign country to work, should I go or should I not go? It is a great responsibility to work outside of India. First of all, there is the matter of one's qualifications. Then there are so many difficulties in a foreign country. Whether I would be able to withstand all those difficulties, I did not know. In fact, what I felt about my fitness at that time was completely negative. So I thought that now was the time to ask Swami Sivananda. He may not be here for long. I should have some guidance and direction from him now, so that I can act accordingly in the future. So one afternoon I told him the problem, and he said, "Surely, surely you will go to a foreign country if they ask you to go." So I answered, "Sir, I'm exceedingly unqualified. I have not got any qualifications of that kind." And his answer was, "Oh, you don't have to think about that." He seemed to feel that it was a most irrelevant consideration. Sri Ramakrishna himself will see to it. You don't have to worry about it. Sri Ramakrishna will do everything. As it happened, he was president of the board of trustees, and in the trustees meeting, he fully approved of my coming to this country. That, of course, was also reassuring. But I'm eternally grateful for the private encouragements that he had given me earlier. It was because of that that I felt fit to come here. Swami Ashokananda continues, "Another afternoon I asked him, 'Maharaj, when am I going to realize God?' Swami Sivananda answered, 'To realize God is a very difficult thing. You will have to do a lot of spiritual practice and other things in order to realize God.' Well, when you hear that, you do not have the heart to think about it any further. So I didn't say anything more. That afternoon, as was our habit, I moved around amongst the monks at the Belurmat. There were always quite a number of monks there, and it was a pleasure to meet them and to talk with this one and that one. There was a ferry service from the Belurmat to Calcutta, and toward the evening the time came to board that boat. I went to salute Swami Sivananda and take leave of him. He seemed to be very eagerly waiting for me. He was seated in a chair in a corner of the porch just outside Swami, the room that had been Swami Vivekananda's room. As I saluted him, he said excitedly, 'See, here is something. Swami Vivekananda is very pleased with you.' He went on to say many other things in that same vein. Then he said, 'You don't have to do much. A little effort and you will realize God.'" End of quote from Swami Sivananda. Oh, he said so many nice things. But the boat was coming, leading me to Calcutta, and I had to run. I have regretted that very much. I could have asked him, "Sir, how did you know all these things? Did Swami Vivekananda himself say anything to you?" but I did not ask him that. Still, what he said that evening, with so much eagerness and affection, is one of the great blessings that I received from him. When the date had been set for my departure from India and my passage had been booked, I asked him one day for a special appointment. That is not generally done in India. When one talks with the Swamis, one just takes a chance on not being interrupted. There are always people coming in and out. But I wanted to talk with him privately and ask him some questions. He said surely and agreed, and he set a special time. I went to him at that time. It was early in the afternoon, and he took me to a room where no one would interrupt. He answered my questions, and then he just poured out all blessings upon me, endless. Then he tried to remember a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Not being able to, he said, "Get me a copy of the Gita." I brought him a copy from a bookshelf, and he found the passage he wanted. But he read that out to me, and he said, "This describes your condition." I won't tell you what it was, but it was a very wonderful thing that he said. I have already told you his last words to me, but his kindness did not stop there. He wrote to me several times after I came to America. In fact, his blessings are on some of the work of this Vedanta Center in San Francisco. As some of you may remember, when I came here, Swami Vividishananda was in charge. We thought we should have a retreat nearer to the city than Shanti Ashrama, so that it could be reached more easily. Swami Vividishananda wrote to Swami Shivananda asking his approval of such a plan. He approved at once. It was not, of course, much later that the society bought the retreat at Olima, but I knew that it had Swami Shivananda's sanction. His sanction and blessing are also on the building of the new temple in San Francisco. After I'd come here, it became more and more clear every month that we would have to have a new temple. The old temple was and still is, well, he writes at the time of his writing, he says the old temple is in very dilapidated condition. But in the meantime, the old temple been completely re-strengthened and restored in so many different ways. Anyway, at that time, this was the condition. So while Swami Shivananda was still living, I wrote to him. I, of course, mean Swami Ashokananda. I wrote to him saying that I felt the time would come where we would need another temple. Should we have one? Should we give up the temple that was built by Swami Trigunatita? He had created such a wonderful atmosphere there, and there is such a divine presence. If we moved our operations to a new temple, we would have to sacrifice that. Should we do it? I asked him all these questions. He wrote me a letter in reply, a translation of which I shall give here in full. To Sriman Ashokananda on 26 January 1933. Swami Shivananda writes, "I have received both of your letters, and having learned about your activities and seeing your dependence on Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda, I have been extremely gratified. I've been overjoyed to learn of the success of your lectures in San Francisco. If as a result some members of the audience are able to find a key to advancing in spiritual life, then all your labor becomes fruitful. I always pray that the Master, that is Sri Ramakrishna, will make you the instrument to point out the path to peace to those who come to you. The letters from San Francisco all praise you highly, and I also see what you're doing through the literature that you have sent. Your dependence on Sri Ramakrishna and Swamiji and your faith in them is at the root of this success. Don't you ever forget it. Always pray that you remain the Lord's servant always, and that you may go on doing the work as service to Sri Ramakrishna. The Lord is spreading his own message among so many people, making you his instrument. For this, consider yourself thankful, and may the Lord never let any other idea enter your mind. Always remember the Lord and contemplate him. No fear. Don't be frightened. If you are dependent on God, then you will see that God is protecting you. Even in the midst of the fire of name and fame, he will always protect you. And I also bless you that you may be free from all egotism, and that having done the Lord's work, you may be fulfilled. I give you my full consent to removing the temple to a good place in the town. Swami Trigunatita ought to acknowledge the need of that. The Swami, while he established this old temple, no doubt desired its prosperity. Why should he think that this work should not go any further but remain where it is? He did what in his time he thought to be good and proper. His work has been done in that place for so many days. Now that the space is insufficient, he himself would move the temple to another place. And if you do this, your effort will receive blessings, first of all, from him. He will be happy. And as regards what you have mentioned, that means the atmosphere of holiness that is present in the old temple, atmosphere of spirituality that's present in the old temple. And as regards what you have mentioned, that will also be communicated to the new temple. It is the divine presence of Sri Ramakrishna that will spread into this new temple. All these outside things are only external. If you have any doubt yet in your mind, then I am saying that through the grace of Sri Ramakrishna, wherever you will move the temple in that place, not only the stream of Sri Ramakrishna's divine power will not be heard in any way or diminished, but rather will grow, so that more and more it will attract people's hearts and minds. You select a place to your heart's content and build a temple according to your own desire. Then Swami Sivananda adds, the rich and the poor were all equal to him, and so are all equal to you. Never expect anything from anyone, neither at the present time nor in the future. If you have to ask for anything, then ask it of the Lord Sri Ramakrishna. You are the children of the King of Kings. Who will give you anything? They will come and take the treasure, the riches from you. And when they will receive it, they will see that what they used to think of to be prosperity is nothing. They will just throw it away. These are quotations from letters of Swami Sivananda to Swami Ashokananda.